Good morning, everyone. My name is Shweta Bania. I am third year PhD student at Purdue University. I am originally from Nepal and interested in digital rhetoric, cultural rhetoric, professional technical writing, and also feminist rhetoric. And why don't you guys start and tell us who you are?
Okay. I'm Jen Fishman, and now I'm an associate professor at Marquette University. And in 2005, when I attended the first RSA seminar, I had just finished my first year of teaching in my first job out of graduate school, and I was at Tennessee Knoxville.
I'm Liz Kimball. I'm starting a position at Drexel University. I've been at Drew University most of the last 8 years. In 2005, I was a grad student at Temple. I had only just finished coursework and knew next to nothing about rhetoric.
I'm Jess Enoch. I'm at the University of Maryland. In 2005, I had just started a tenure track job at the University of New Hampshire. It was my first year. I just finished my first year.
I'm Rene De Los Santos. In 2005, I was a graduate student at UC Santa Barbara. Now I'm at the Universidad Autónoma de Baja California in Mexico. So it's kind of a big shift from there to here.
I'm Scott Weibel. In 2005, I was a PhD student at Penn State University, finishing a dissertation on language diversity and politics in history of composition studies. Now I am an associate professor and director of professional writing at the University of Maryland, College Park. And the reason we're all talking about 2005, Jen alluded to it, we were five of the, 20 mm-hmm. attendees, either very junior assistant professors or graduate students at the first RSA seminar at Kent, Ohio, and the theme that week was the history of rhetoric as the history of rhetoric as a teaching tradition.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which kind of came out of, in part, the Alliance of Rhetoric Society's mm-hmm. discussion of rhetoric as a teaching tradition, which, as I remember it, also took off in a way that no one had predicted. Right. In terms of really grabbing everyone's attention mm-hmm. and being non-controversial in ways that sometimes saying rhetoric was about teaching seemed to really push and pull at other ideas of what rhetoric is as a tradition.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's something that when we all came together, we were all interested in issues around pedagogy, and that did felt new, mm-hmm. and to talk about rhetorical education felt really new at that moment. Now it feels so funny that it felt new because it feels like we've been talking about it, but it does. Yeah, that's so true.
I attended my first RSA Summer Institute last year. Mm-hmm. And the way I got information about it, I had no idea about that, even if that existed. So I saw my friend's Facebook post and see saying that deadline is 2 hours away, and I'm applying now. So in between that 2 hours, I just wrote my abstract and sent it. I want to know, how did you guys find out more about this mm-hmm. in 2005? Who did share this idea about an institute? How did you apply?
Wow. I'm trying to remember.
Cheryl Glenn was running the institute, mm-hmm. and Scott and I were her students, so she encouraged us to apply. And she was running it with, wasn't she?
Michael Leff. I remember writing a one-page single-space abstract to apply. For me, it was talking about, I was thinking of my dissertation very much in terms of composition studies, not rhetoric at all. So it's a matter of trying to think about it more in those terms as a way to pitch my way into it. I don't remember much more about hearing it, how we heard about
well,
it.
It was a kind of an interesting moment in my graduate studies. I remember that being not quite clear if I was like a rhetoric person or, you know, what the hell. Is that the end of the version? Because I was in an education department, and So one of the things I was thinking about is like, how do I locate myself, you know, disciplinarily, right? Issues and so I remember the conversation I had with my advisor at the time, Chuck Benjamin. He said, "Hey, this thing just seemed to be here. Maybe you should see, you know, go here and see if there's anything in there for you, right?" So I think that was sort of my. So I remember going to the institute, going, what is going to be, right? So for me, in that sense, it was good. But that's how it came about. It was kind of almost secondhand in some ways. But that was, I remember that being a crucial moment in my education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was working with Sue Wells, so I guess she got the email, I suppose. Well, I'm sure she was part of the discussions, too.
Yeah.
And she had said, and we had just done an independent study and read through the rhetorical tradition together. And I guess because most of my entry into the field was composition, that was just the lens I was thinking about, and then mm-hmm. the sort of research directions I was starting to think about. And I remember her saying, "You have to do this. This is perfect for you."
Yeah.
So, but definitely, I think the historical approach was the real draw that drew me to it, and you know, away from just regular old composition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember because the week was broken up chronologically with different scholars who worked in different of those periods leading the day or half a day. I had just finished my first year of teaching, and I had come out of a program at Stanford University that had Andrea Lunsford and Marvin Diogenes and all of these wonderful people in the program in writing and rhetoric, but no actual established Rhet Comp curriculum until after I had finished all of my courses. And so all of my Rhet Comp education was hands-on and oriented toward college writing research, and though my dissertation was historical, the gaps in my own actual knowledge of rhetoric history were enormous. And so the idea of a week of intensive with these people who work in each of those areas, I mean, there's no department where that really mm-hmm. is feasible, because it's not how mm-hmm. rhetoric is staffed.
And now the seminars don't work that way anymore. It's just the same people. I mean, not that it's bad. It would logistically, I don't know.
We should read through that.
This was the first seminar ever. I had forgotten, but people came for just like
right.
Jeff Walker was there just for the day or for the morning, and Shirley mm-hmm. Logan came for the afternoon, and you know, and so wasn't Martin Kermargo there for a day?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so it just was also really amazing just to kind of see these people who
right.
you
yeah.
had read or you knew were big scholars, just kind of to pop in for a little, you know, like, you know, what's that called when you have a class of an expert?
Master class.
Master class.
Like
just like
mm-hmm.
a master class, and kind of take all these notes and hear them. A lot of them lectured. It wasn't kind of like group work. It was like a real, I'm going to tell you about this period and how teaching worked in this period, and
right.
we all took notes. I bet we still...
I still have a blue accordion folder.
Me too, mine's red.
Mm-hmm.
I think Linda Farrar Buckley was one of the only people who actually had us do an activity.
Yeah.
And she brought archival materials from the 18th century, and we actually did some interpretation or something like that. But otherwise, and I remember writing notes for my life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It was not a complaint about being lectured to at all.
But that was the idea, was that and it still is that especially the week-longs are supposed to be something like, if you don't get a seminar in a graduate, like in your graduate program, that this is supposed to be to fill in for that. So they were definitely doing that. Yeah,
right.
It was great.
Mm-hmm.
But I think now there's so much more focused and with fewer people.
Right.
Like, still super special, but I think the newness of it and the breadth was really cool.
Yeah,
yeah.
Pretty lucky.
You were mentioning Martin Camargo, and I can remember pretty vividly from that week that his session is when the value of that theme or the value of that lens became apparent to me, that thinking of the history of rhetoric as a history of its teaching tradition. I can remember him making that point that, you know, a book like the rhetorical tradition has this largely this gap in the medieval period, because no new theory
mm-hmm.
emerged from that. So if you're looking at the history of rhetoric as a history of its theory and philosophy, nothing happened there. And the way that he showed us all the letter writing exercises and things that were happening, rhetoric was taught in the Middle Ages, in the medieval period. Here's what we gain from looking at it, even though there wasn't some new theoretical principle. I can really remember his week.
I think that's like what he said. I'm right now, if we're gonna print that out, we're going to go, a lot of people will be like, there was theory. but yeah, that was his pitch, and I think that made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the institute was completely different from what it is now. I'm assuming that it was a week-long seminar on each different topic with all 20 members
Right, and then we go out to lunch together. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, one of the presidents that I remember all the time was Mike Leff. Mike Leff was there all the time. Mm-hmm. And they were very accessible, but I remember Mike Leff's special sort of reaching out.
Mm-hmm.
For me especially, I was like, you know, am I a rhetoric guy or not, right? And so for me, Mike Leff's sort of reaching out to me personally, it was very touching and very moving for me at the time.
Yeah. So do you think that particular institute was kind of like transformative experience from you to education, from education to rhetoric?
I think definitely. I think remember at the end, I think we had some sort of round table we were kind of discussing, and I didn't say this, you know, back to Jesus moment, right? I think I remember saying something like that. For me, definitely. I think it really helped me see where my work could fit, because, you know, I was thinking about Mexican, you know, history, Mexican rhetoric, and at the time, nobody was doing that, right? I'm not even thinking of Mexico at all, and in a real sense, right? Latin America, for example. So for me, I could see myself in the field doing something. And now, I was just at a panel with somebody who's talking about a Mexican president. I was like, you know, things like that. It's like, it's really nice to, you know, how far it's come, right? So yeah, it was very important.
Mm-hmm. What are your fun memories?
I mean, the sociability was enormous part of it, and we were the only ones there.
Yeah, there wasn't
literally
another group
in the whole campus.
Right.
Yeah,
that's
and everything
right.
else was shut down.
Yeah. I mean, that was true because at one restaurants
there was
that just were not open.
That's
yeah,
right.
It was like funny that way.
Yeah,
that's right. And does anyone remember? I mean, we were staying in the convention center, which was like glorified dorms,
mm-hmm.
essentially, and it was not a member of the Institute attendees, I believe it was one of the Institute teachers who was the leader in breaking the no alcohol in the convention center. And so some of the conviviality in the evening
was
you know, it was very genuine, and it was as much the classroom as the formal classroom, for sure.
I mean, I think it was really exciting to kind of think of being there at that moment and to, for a lot of the scholars who were leading the session, to think about pedagogy as being really important was like new for them, and they were excited, and so we kind of felt like this was this just unbelievable moment where we were kind of being engaged and like reaching out to us and saying, well, that makes sense. And I had rhetorical education was like the key word of the book I was working on, and it just helped me crystallize like everything I was doing to say, like, this is where the book belongs, it's within this tradition, this is a good way to understand what I was grappling with my book revisions and things like that. So it just was, I think, a really exciting moment individually, but collectively, like, we're all still really good friends. And it was, like what Jen said, there weren't other seminars happening, so we were the only people. So it was kind of like, if you don't want to be part of the group, then you're just, like, in Kent, Ohio. So it was fun. It was really, really fun. Yeah.
Some of the seminars, there had been readings, right? I think that matches the style. You know, you get sent this impressive amount of reading, and of course you're doing whatever is your semester's or quarter's work, and then you're preparing for this intensive and getting a glimpse of how intensive maybe it is about to be. And then there were evening homeworks sometimes, which we might have indulged in collaboratively. And so, I mean, the most notorious one was a copious exercise, where our catchphrase was, beer is good for rhetoricians.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my goodness. You have such a good memory.
I feel like that cemented my friendship with Renee.
Yeah. For some obvious reasons.
That's right. there was a kind of performative aspect
right.
to it
mm-hmm.
all. Did Jeff Walker make us do Partridge's Motto? You were remembering that, Scott.
I remember looking at a page of Prognismata exercises
mm-hmm.
that I think was something he, at the time he was developing to put into the book he was working
mm-hmm.
on. I don't remember if we, I think we did do some,
I think we did.
Some
yeah,
tales,
we did.
Some creating some,
didn't Larry
there was a story of the
yeah,
spider that bit the kid or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had to do some exercise like that.
I remember, maybe it was wrong memory, but I remember Larry Green did the whole dead parrot thing. Was it?
That's
what I remember,
that.
Yeah.
What was it?
Monty Python and the dead parrot sketch. And you know.
The dust pushing up daisies.
Yeah, yeah. There's no more. There's
moved
more.
To the great beyond.
Yeah, yeah.
I do remember that reading mode, though, too, that Jen mentioned. Because I had sort of timed. I was doing an archival research trip at Urbana, Illinois, like the days leading up to it. So I remember being in the archives for 8 hours a day and then going to dinner and sitting at dinner by myself with just readings for four straight nights. It was a load.
It was a lot of reading.
It
yeah.
was a load.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if Cheryl was in charge of it, you know we all were expected to be like tip-top by the next day.
Yeah.
So it
was happening.
That's right. But it was
a and I remember too, that like the only five people sitting here from it are English people, but it was an evenly balanced
right.
10 people from COM, 10
right.
from English, and what I don't even remember his name anymore, to be honest. So if he listens to this, maybe it will resonate. There was only one person there who was really working on research projects that were pedagogically oriented. There was someone working on a project about the kind of the history of public speaking education and really thinking of it as a rhetorical practice. And
was that Chris?
Lumberg? No.
No.
No. I shouldn't even have said this. This might be a part that Eric edits out.
Wait, do we have a listing or anything?
We do. There's some, that email that...
Yeah, and I was shocked at who I couldn't place.
But to me, there was that... I had a sense it felt like the teaching tradition
mm-hmm.
element of it was one that the English people were connecting more with for the research side, not just their pedagogy
yeah.
mm-hmm.
side.
Here,
I remember that
side.
Coming up in some of the conversations in the evenings
mm-hmm.
over dinner.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking about the idea, because we did some writing off of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
We were thinking
we
about
did.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I could get that out.
Yeah. Well,
that.
what I remember from that exercise is that idea of teaching tradition, and I used the... Mexican National Museum of Art.
Yes.
About,
oh, I remember that now.
And so how, because I remember going to the, it's in Mexico City, and I remember going through it, and every room was about, it was pedagogical, right? And in this room, it, you know, it's about the revolution, and everything is about instructing people about how to understand the nation through the art, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was thinking through, the, you know, it helped me make that connection between the seminar. And at that moment, it was really useful for me because it helped me connect sort of what I was thinking in terms of,
mm-hmm.
you know, my area and the rhetoric, right, and the idea of the teaching tradition
right.
and sort of how can it work in other spheres, right, in other areas. So that was for me an interesting exercise to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that it is kind of nice to have this conversation because we wanted to
yes
publish an article when we got out to talk about. Now looking, we did a lot of work on it.
For
RSQ,
we sent
yeah.
it out.
That's right.
We sent it in
we
and got the reader reports back.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember who they were from.
I'm trying to think. And it's just interesting. I think it seemed at one point that it was just too hard for everyone. There's yours.
That's right. But it was a sort of octalog logic, but
right.
maybe we were more than eight. And the only thing I can remember in this moment about the reader report is that we were encouraged to make something that was coherent, whole,
yeah, right.
and we had really understood things as our very more individual reflections because we shared this thing, and there wasn't a hook that we
mm-hmm.
were able to figure out to
yeah,
make that.
I think everyone was at such critical parts in careers. People were starting new jobs and finishing dissertations,
yeah.
and that people started falling off. But it's nice to think that we get this moment because I remember thinking we need to mark what just happened because it felt really important to be there.
That's right.
And special to be part
yeah.
of that group.
Was it published somewhere? So
It wasn't. And one of the things that I'm now remembering, one of the contributors to that is somebody who, Erin,
mm-hmm.
who was writing from outside of academia. So she was maybe a master's student
mm-hmm.
in 2005, but her career trajectory was to do non-for-profit education-related work. And I think at that time, maybe she was working with a non-for-profit doing curriculum development in Colombia and in some African countries. And so her piece was all about how this theme of rhetorical education, you know, made sense to her and enabled her to do things that were really different from what any of the rest of us was doing.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was involved with that as well.
No.
I should have been.
You have to answer that question just to fill in that history. I think Jen, Jess, and I took sort of the editorial lead on it. We sent a manuscript to RSQ
mm-hmm.
and got two reader reports back.
It's fun.
Hasn't been published since then.
That's right.
Moment.
Yeah, right. Let's get on that.
Does anyone stand by what they said?
God, I'd have to reread it. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, as a historical moment, right?
Yes,
right.
And I can't figure out which one's the latest. But anyway, we shouldn't dwell on this. It's never good to just like, let's let somebody just look through some. So
how do you define that particularly in your life as a scholar or a good scholar and how do you teach it? How do you define it? Is there a definition? Or how do you think about it?
I mean, I'm still working with that topic. I don't know that I do it necessarily from the historiographic angle, but I taught a graduate seminar last year on contemporary rhetorical education. What is it? Where does it manifest itself inside, outside? Educational institutions, what are the aims of it? I mean, I think I've shifted away from working on language diversity and language pedagogy, working more on professional writing, entrepreneurship, and education stuff, but still, I think that rhetorical education is always framing how I'm seeing these topics. Again, not just from the teaching side, but from the research side.
Yeah, me too. And I think, it's been, in some ways, the writing I'm doing is finally starting to get away from the pedagogy aspect a bit because I'm starting to think about audiences beyond people who get it, who are teachers, because we're invested in teaching. I think I'm still working with some of the same themes and starting to frame them more in terms of democracy and things like that. But at the same time, developing now, I mean, what was unheard of at the time, but developing like undergraduate writing majors, I'm
mm-hmm.
still, I find myself being kind of really appreciative of giving some of this stuff to undergraduates and finding how much they get it, even though I'm not teaching people who want to be teachers,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and not necessarily just history of rhetoric, but, reading, reading When the First Voice You Hear Is Not Your Own, for instance, and just how much it grabs students,
mm-hmm.
which at the time I never would have dreamed of giving that. Like, to me, that was a piece that was for us, not for,
mm-hmm.
A classroom consumption.
I feel like that was such a moment where I just identified so much with RSA as an organization
mm-hmm.
and really felt part of the group because we were a small group and all these different scholars were coming in and we were meeting them and it just felt like RSA wanted our generation to be invested in RSA, and it worked. It was very persuasive, and I know Cheryl and Mike were really great about just being genuinely interested in us and our work,
mm-hmm.
and feeling like what we were thinking about had value and was really adding to scholarly and pedagogical conversations.
Yeah.
And I'm just really glad that the genre continued because it's a different experience than a conference experience. I mean, we spent all week together. People still do. And I know that these workshops and seminars are transformative for people, just regardless of what the theme is, just to be able to sit in a room with people and not just give a paper and kind of ask a few questions and leave, but to think through ideas with other people. I mean, I think it's a great thing for RSA. It's a big community builder, and it definitely worked that first time. And I'm glad that we, like, were kind of proof positive to it, because if it had failed or they hadn't continued, it would be sad.
Yeah, I think being authorized to do this work by having mentors who aren't just from your own graduate program.
Yeah,
I mean, because there's always that, they have to be nice to me. But, you know, like getting to hang out with Cheryl Glenn for the week, where, you know, at a conference, I'd never do more than say hello, maybe. But.
That's right. That makes me think of two things. One, you know, Cheryl took a number of us women participants to dinner, and you had an explicit, like, professional mentoring session. And so there are all these small things. I certainly think about that, where on the one hand, some of it wasn't news, but, you know, it was, she was so deliberate that that was also part of this seminar experience, right? That it had all these features to it that aren't visible when you read the theme or the description or the kinds of things that are available. And around the theme, in one of my projects now is about undergraduate research in rhetoric and writing. And part of how Jane Greer, Dominic Della Carpini, and I are interpreting data, you know, there's always a question, is the hit that a student gets off undergraduate research simply from doing undergraduate research and having mentorship and a long project, or are they gaining something that's specific to the discipline in which they're doing the research? And as we listened to transcripts of our focus group data, part of what students seem to learn, whichever school they do rhetoric research, whether they're in comm doing it or comp doing it, they become teachers of the knowledge in our field, and they bring it up, whether they want to be able to teach the student sitting next to them in the class because they're on fire about what they're doing and they think their classmates could, or because they come here and they have the experience at a poster session or something like that of actually being able to share knowledge. But, you know, they lifted that out. But I'm sure it clicked for me as something to talk about, you know, in relationship to how we've learned to talk about rhetoric as a teaching tradition, connecting to the first seminar.
How important was to develop mentor-mentee relationship in that seminar? Were you able to develop that relationship?
I mean, here we are.
I mean, the other person that was mentioned, I hung out with a bunch, was Linda Ferreira Buckley.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I was really interested in 18th century stuff, and she was doing that, and I didn't have somebody on my campus quite in that way. Yeah, I mean, she wrote letters for me when I went on the job market.
Wow.
I sent her pictures of my kid. I mean,
But I think there was also just, like, our peer-to-peer mentoring and collaborations. Like, Jen and I have done a few projects together, and, like, Cheryl was my advisor, so I was already so lucky to be working with her, but it was great. Like, she was great during that week, and Linda was amazing. And I remember talking with Susan Jarrett when she came in, I think, to do the workshop. So that was just being able to talk with those people was great. But I think the peer piece, too, you kind of realize that, like, the peer-to-peer and kind of creating a cohort was really helpful to kind of make through the profession.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, for me, I think it was especially because I was coming out of a education department, and so I had no cohort. I was like it. Literally, I was it. So for me to find people who, like, not only like me for, like, who I am, I think but also, like, you know, shared some, you know, interest, that was very important for me. So it's great. So, you know, so it was great in that sense.
Yeah.
It's in the list.
There was a lot of community building, mentoring, and safe space for us.
Didn't we also do an RSA presentation in Memphis?
We did.
Coming out of the seminar, some of us who were going to that RSA,
which
I think that was my first RSA conference. So my first RSA was actually the Institute, because I'd been in graduate school in the quarter system, and that had made the conference seem like the last good idea. As a graduate student in negotiating all those deadlines. And so I had never come to an RSA conference until after the RSA Institute.
Was Memphis the following summer?
I think
it was.
So.
I did not come because I was in the last week of writing my dissertation.
You guys didn't come. I remember that. Yeah. I'm just realizing, did Shirley's book come out right after this? That's amazing.
I think that's an interesting. I think both Shirley and Jeff Walker had sort of books that were very much in process and very much a part topically of that.
Yeah, that's exciting.
That week and.
Because we're not reading like chapters from her book.
Shirley was developing her.
They have not yet been. Yeah. That's cool. That's really cool.
You know, one of the features of the seminar that I remember sort of coming up maybe during Shirley's time with us, I mean, we were a seriously predominantly white group of seminarians. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the issue of who's present both in the history and in the doing the historiography, that was a present topic very much and was with us in a way that, you know, is a puzzle of representation.
I can see you in one of the sessions where those were really the Western.
Yeah, but that was revolutionary to even be talking about that, and I think Shirley really pushed it. I mean, she always does, which I think is so great, and she was a good mentor to us all that week as well, but
And to think about what that week would look like now if you were to do it in 2018. That would be sort of a lens through which to frame the whole week, not the last session on the last day.
That's right.
You called it revolutionary. Can you tell us something more about it?
Well, I think kind of just what we've been saying a little bit is just like Jeff Walker had just published a piece that was like arguing for the history of rhetoric as a teaching tradition and kind of the idea that theory is the thing that we should be talking about and pedagogy is kind of secondary. And I think we've all been kind of bringing it, at least I know it was a few times, like the idea that what was composition's relationship to rhetoric and how do we come together, and if you're on the English side, what's your investment, and if you're on the comm side, what's our shared investment? And I think this, you know, Roxanne Mountford and Bill Keats' deep concern in trying to, and Rosa too, Rosa Everly, and making bridges between English and comm was for them to say, we've always taught this, was Jeff's argument. But that was new. Yeah. That was new, and it was like something new to even just say and be okay with, and not to say theory is the thing and teaching is the thing we're not going to be. It's not interesting. It's not. And so when we all came together, I think especially for the comm people, we were like, we have a lot to say about teaching. And I think from the comm people, they were saying, we don't talk about teaching as much, but like we want to talk about this. We spend a lot of time teaching, and we want to see ourselves as part of this tradition. And so there's just like a lot of excitement around what does it mean to teach rhetoric. And then at the same time, there's like all this troubling of the rhetorical tradition and all these other, you know, Shirley's work and Cheryl's work and all these critiques of the Western canon were just immersed. I mean, that was really, they were like in the late 90s being published, so catching that critique up to, you know, rhetorical education was fun, and it felt like, okay, we can put these two things together and there can be a lot can happen.
That's right, and the implications to go beyond what you can put in an anthology, because pedagogy is physical and it happens in time, and so there are methodological implications to getting really interested in instruction, and I remember Linda especially bringing those forward, and what does a document really do for you if you're studying a theory versus if you're studying an exchange between humans in a room, and those sorts of things. I mean, they opened up research projects in a way that had exigence that maybe wasn't the case before, felt marginal rather than potentially central.
Because you were really interested in the end art, but performance, and like how do you capture this performance?
Right. And when a performance, you know, if it has to relate to an important or groundbreaking theory moment, that's a tough sell. But if it's about the practice of something, then you're in a different zone. And to have that have legitimacy and urgency because of how we were trying to articulate a tradition really changed what it felt like to be interested in that kind of stuff and to like want to also have a career.
I think we were participating. I mean, this was happening outside the Institute. It wasn't just us, but I think that they really chose a great theme that felt exciting and cutting edge at that moment that a lot of stakeholders could jump in on.
And that continued mentorship, like Renee, you mentioned, you know, talking with Mike Leff, and a lot of those relationships just carried forward in different ways, and Liz, you mentioned it too. And
well, it's just the idea of time. I think, like the way you say time, they all spent time with us, and I think that's hard to replicate, right? And even now, I think, because it's so big now, and the relationship is a little bit different than it was back then. And I still remember, like, each everybody spent some time with us, and that was special, right? And in that sense, you know,
really
it
special.
Was like, there, this moment we have, we're going to share all this moment together, and, you know, so that was, like, for me, really important.
Do you remember, speaking of that moment that you're mentioning, do you remember Carlin Gorse Gamble? Because she did this whole thing. Was it the end or was it the beginning? Her talk was really about, like, how ways of organizing a history of rhetoric survey. But then it was like freaking Carlin Gorse Gamble, like, you know, like she, you know, like for someone to present that sort of traditional classroom problem, but doing it, you know, like who she was through what her work had been, of totally upending the whole notion of the canon.
That's
really. Right.
Yeah, that was cool.
And it had, there was such a pragmatic aspect to the seminar too.
Yeah. You know, I remember getting all this coaching in grad school. I went to a program that was so tiny. Their method was go to a lot of conferences and meet people. And I remember feeling really, really bad at how hard that was. Like, I should have been better at it. And I think the way the structure was set up that let that happen was so much better. So I think not so much advice to graduate students as advice to, like, now that we're in leadership positions, really, like, how do we keep creating those small communities? And even, like you say, the Institute has grown so much. Like, growth is good, but there's loss with it, too.
Still good, though. 2019 at Maryland.
I'm excited.
Like, we're, Scott and I are hosting, like, we're hosting at Maryland with Christy Maddox and the comm department, and it's exciting to kind of see how big it is, but also just like the real positive responses that people have. And I you rarely hear like negative things coming out of these experiences. And I just hope people embrace it when they're there and really take it seriously, because it's a really special thing that I think that RSA offers and that they really believe in, or that we all believe in.
Yeah, go and be present. What you just said, that it's the wrong thing to go to and think, I'm also going to complete revisions on this,
or
I'm also going to be finishing that online class that I'm also taking that summer. Like, if you're going to do it, like, really do it.
Yeah, and socialize with the people in your group and meet other people, because it does.
Yeah.
What other outcomes do you see in 2019 of this Polaris Assessment Institute?
The outcomes of ours?
No. The graduate student or, like, outcome of whole in summer institute in comparison to 2005.
You two are on the spot.
Now, I mean, when you think about it, I don't even know how many workshops they offered. Was it like 2 or 3? We had like 24 workshops, and, you know, I what is it, 8-week-long seminars. I think, like, Shirley's and the rest of the leaders, like, plug for diversity, I hope, is represented in this institute. That has been a major objective for us, to bring scholars in who are working from different perspectives. There is no way that we could, not that there's anything wrong with how that was run, but like Scott said, I think this is a reflection of kind of how much the field is kind of troubling, you know, the rhetorical tradition or what the understanding of rhetorical education is, by just how, I hope, diverse the offerings look like.
I think, too, there's just been a real, we spent a lot of time thinking about it being where it is, too, being out in the Washington, D.C. suburbs, and how to, not with every single workshop, but I think there was discussion with every single one of these topics about what it means to have it here in D.C., what are the opportunities for archival study, site visits, so thinking about how to deepen the learning experience by connecting the theme to the geographic location and cultural location was important.
It's also an interesting moment that you're asking because they're doing the project, which is new in Reno this next summer. And so they'll be doing kind of what we did and be going through this in, and hopefully, you know, 10 years from now, the projects we'll be getting is like feel, you know, bit as much like love and like good feelings about what that experience was. Because I think it's good that RSA is continuing to rethink like how people experience the association.
That's a good final line.
Still come to the Institute.
That's a good final line.
Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you.